Here we go. Okay, every year, the week or so before Pesach, we do a chabura where the topic is Pesach. And the hard part is that, I've said this in the past, this is not my, in terms of delivery, it's fine, but in terms of preparation, it's not exactly my favorite chabura of the year. Because I find that, like, either we do like Divrei Torah, which are like short snippets, and then there's no interaction, I just quite kind of fire out Divrei Torah, which is fine, but then I feel like it's not really what the chabura is all about. Or we do like some full out version of a shir, which is great, but then nobody feels like they walk away with something that they could do to make their seder a little bit easier. So,
it's not too late. We can do Mitzara.
So it actually worked right. Oh, so then that's the other thing. We could always do the Parsha, but then people feel like they got gypped on Pesach, and since almost always it is Tzav or Mitzora or something like that, it's not exactly a Parsha where you're like, oh, I'd be so heartbroken. Chanukah is much easier. We never do Chanukah. We always do Bereshis. But okay, so last Shabbos, I was looking at Rabbi Sachs, and he actually had a beautiful idea on Parshas Tezriah Mitzorah that I thought tied in beautifully for Pesach.
So Hanukkah Bereshis? I don't get it. Hanukkah is not near Bereshis.
In Sefer Bereshis, right? Like, it's usually like, I would never give up Parshas Vayeshev or Miketz to talk about Hanukkah. I think over the years, we've done like a Hanukkah vart, a Hanukkah theme, but it's always on the Parsha.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me share with you, I hope, something that will A, help with the Parsha, B, help with the Seder, but also be an interactive type of Shir as well. So just by way of introduction, we never did the Seder by ourselves until probably the year before COVID. I think that was the first time we did a Seder. We just felt that our oldest was already in ninth grade. If we didn't start, we would never have a chance. And then, like, she would come back from Israel and be like, I don't even know what my family's Seder is supposed to be like. So we broke from the family for one of the two Sedarim. That was, like, good prep for Aliyah, because I always said, like, it works out really well. We do our Seder. Hopefully our Seder is fun. It's good. It's enriching. And then afterwards, we go to the family Seder, which is like a family Seder. It's family all together. The kids have a really good time. The kids...
Not good fun and enrichment.
The kids, you know, are at the table. They're not at the table, whatever. But it's a beautiful thing to have a lot of family in the same room. But I always said, like, if you have one Seder and you do it right, then it's amazing. And if you have one Seder and it's not fun, then it's painful that you have to do it a second time. So it was good prep, and that's what we did the last couple of years. And now here we are, please God, only having one Seder. But I actually was a little bit nervous, because I always wonder what my kids really think about their Seder. So the other day, one of my kids was like, I don't know, it's going to be so weird. We're having company this time. It's the first year we've ever had company for the Seder. And on top of that, it's Ariella's friends. Like, will the Seder be as fun as usual? And when they said that, I kind of felt validated. So what I try to do at our Seder is every year, I try to do a theme that kind of like weaves into the Seder. One year I tried something that was a complete fail. So I decided like my theme would be more Torah oriented. I did like escape the Seder, like an escape the room. Clues and combination locks on key on stuff. I don't know. It was like way beyond what my Seder needed to be. So every year I try to have a theme of something. So this year the theme is actually ties into this. And I'll share that with you as we go along. So we start from the very end of Perek Bet. Moshe's already born, Moshe's already run away, Moshe's already in Midian, and we're told, and in those days, Paro died, the king of Egypt died, and the Jewish people were wiped from all the work that they had, and they cried out, and their cries went all the way up to God from their hard work. Okay, so in this pasuk, we have a couple questions that we have to wonder. First off, what is the connection between the death of the king of Egypt and the anacha, the groaning of the people from their work? Okay, that's one question. I really did this wrong. Does anybody else want to pipe in with any questions? No, okay. So also, what happened that all of a sudden their cries reach God? And don't all their cries reach God? So what's going on in this pasuk? Vayishma Elokim et nakatam, God hears their cries. Vayizkor Elokim et brito et Avraham et Yitzhak et Yaakov, God remembers the covenant of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And vayar Elokim bnei Yisrael vayeda Elokim, and God sees the Jewish people. And God knows. So the structure of Chav Dal and Chav Hey are very strange anyway. How could you have written these psukim? What words could you have gotten rid of between Chav Dal and Chav Hey?
Yeah,
you could have gotten rid of Elokim. How many Elokims could you have gotten rid of?
One, two, maybe.
Definitely two, maybe even three. It could have been Vayishma Elokim et nakatam, Vayizkor brito et Avraham et Yitzhak et Yaakov, Vayar et bnei Yisrael vayeda. Why do you have these four separate actions? God did this, God did that. What do you need all of that? And so my three questions are, first of all, what's going on in Pasuk Chav Gimel, the connection of the Melech Mitzrayim and the groaning, and all of a sudden now they cry, and that it finally comes up to God. You actually might have even been able to get rid of all four Elokims, because Vatal Shavatam Elokim and Avodah, then Vayishma Nakatam would have been sufficient. Why the focus on God? Not so much why. Is it there four times or three times or five times, whatever it is? But why the focus on Hashem? So those are my two questions. So we'll start from the Medrash Haggadah. The Medrash Haggadah says as follows: Vayamat Melech Mitzrayim Milameid Shenitzara. It comes to teach us that he had tzaras u'mitzora chashuv kameid. And a mitzora is one who is considered as though he's dead. Now the reason why the pasuk might be inclined to do Vayamat Melech Mitzrayim, as he didn't really die, is because perhaps there's no indication that he was buried or anything like that. And also, if there's this sudden groan, why the groan and why is that connected? So if he's a mitzora chashuv kameis, and the narrative that the medrash is going to bring out in the coming like lines is perhaps the reason why his death, so to speak, of becoming a mitzora is what causes them such pain. When it says that the Jews groaned, it doesn't mean that they groaned; it's that the Jews died. Shemar ki rabot anchati. His doctors told him that if he bathed in the blood of Jews, that he would be healed. So he killed and slaughtered Jews in order to do that. A different medrash says that he shechted 150 Jews in the morning and 150 Jews in the evening for his blood bath, literally. And that's why they were so upset. Meaning, it would have been enough that the suffering that they do is enough already. But on top of that, to be suffering in this way, it was even worse. Vayizakhu, and they cried out. Shayu notlim tinokei Yisrael umesimim otam mekom halaveinim. So also they cried out because they would take the Egyptians would take the young children, the babies of the Jewish people, and put them in place of bricks. If they didn't have enough bricks to finish building their buildings, they would put children inside. Horrible. Not exactly sure from a structural standpoint if that's like a good thing. Right. Imagine you're building your house and there isn't enough, you know, materials. So you put human like beings in their place. I can't imagine that that's a good thing, but from a structural standpoint, but certainly from the perspective of the Jewish people, that's terrible. And so, they cried out until their cries reached God. And min ha'avodah, the last one is v'tal shavatam elokim min ha'avodah. What's avodah? Shayu onsim nishotehem. That on top of all the other indignities that they had to go through, and the bloodbath, and their children being placed in the walls and in the structures that were being built, on top of that, the Egyptians were raping their wives. So that's that medrash fills in a lot and certainly explains why the Jewish people are so broken, and also why we have Vayzaku and Vayanchu, Vayzaku. We have multiple forms of crying, and their cries really pierce the heavens because their despair has been deepened. So okay, so that's the medrash. Now I'm not going to ask a question on this medrash, like is it really true or not? I don't know. But what I want to focus in on this medrash, and this is the theme, I guess, of where I'm going to spend the time with my family this year at the Seder, is we're going to try to find in the Seder and in the Haggadah if there's an emphasis on the little people. So what does this medrash point out? It points out the suffering of the children, the suffering of the babies, the suffering of the women, right? That's what it is. And none of them are named. They're all just anonymous individuals that are suffering. But now I want to share with you the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer Memchet. I'm not going to say that the picture, I said that the picture was not so easy to get. The hardest part probably was trying to find this source. Googling.
Oh, that Haggadah is fantastic. I use it every year.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So I usually at some point in the year plug a Haggadah or two. So if you're still looking, this is a picture Haggadah by Gadi Palik. The cats, is it the cats Haggadah? I don't know. By Baruch Chait, the rabbi, and Gadi Palik, the artist. Feldheim puts it out. It's really, really, really amazing. The pictures there are awesome. If you're looking for something else, I have no idea where to get this because I bought it in Slunim, Israel, and Mea Sharim, not Slunim, Europe. But this is an awesome Haggadah. It is the Toras Avos Haggadah. I'm sure it's not Torat Avot. But everything is like a two paragraph at most Vart. And it's just, they're so good. And they're, if you're looking for like Chassidish, but not like hard Chassidish, it's a great Haggadah. And okay, so the hardest part was actually locating the source because Google was not very helpful. In the end, I found, you know, the source cited in the Haggadah itself in the back. Okay, so the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says the following. Rachel bat bino shel metushelach haytaharala ledet. So there is Rachel, the granddaughter of Metushelach, and she was pregnant. V'ramsa b'chomer im bala, and she was in the, I guess she fell in, or she was in the pit where they made the bricks. I guess like that big cement, you know, whatever. I guess nowadays we have like that machine that pours out the cement. Back then, that probably was the equivalent of the machine. So she was in there, and what happens? V'yatzah havlad, she went into labor, and the kid fell out mitoch me'eha, from within her. V'nit'arev b'toch ha'chomer, and the child became mixed into the cement mixture. V'altat zakata lefnei kisei ha'kavod. And her cries reached all the way up to Shemayim. Uva'ota laila yarad Michael ha'malach v'haleu lefnei akisei ha'kavod. God brought that child, that brick, up to Shemayim, to the kisei ha'kavod. ואותו הלילה ירד הקדוש ברוך הוא והיכה בכור עם מצרים, שנאמר והיא בחצי הלילה ושם היכה כל בכור. And so years later, at least 40 years later, God goes and he takes the Jewish people out on that night. So this medrash gives us an understanding about what was it that Vatal Shavatam El Elokim, what cry came all the way up to God. And that cry is the cry of Rachel Bat Metushelach. So what's interesting is that here it's no longer an anonymous person. We have Rachel Bat Beno Shel Metushelach. Interesting that the Medrash, if this story and this woman is not, you know, a real story, the fact that her grandfather's name is Metushelach, I don't know if there is any significance to that. But the picture itself is probably, if not the most jarring, it's the second most jarring picture in the entire Haggadah. Who is she? And what's with this story? What are we supposed to understand about it? So those are, you know, the two Midrashim themselves, I think, are very much related. The suffering of these people and that it turns God to let the Jewish people go. So I want to hold on to that medrash and that part of the Haggadah, and I want to turn to the actual Haggadah itself. The Haggadah tells us how we came out of Egypt. This is one of the parts of the Haggadah that we often, I'd like to call it the mumbling part of the Haggadah, right? It's like we drone. Right? That's, you know, I remember as a kid that there were certain parts of the Haggadah that, like, you couldn't get very far because you said four words and then everybody jumped in for a Dvar Torah. And then there were the parts of the Haggadah where you just moved. So this one is, at least in my experience, a moving, not in a good way, part of the Haggadah. So we have a Yotzei Hashem Mitzrayim, God took us out of Mitzrayim, lo yedei malach, ve lo yedei saraf, ve lo yedei shaliach, not through an angel, not through a seraph or any other messenger, El HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmo, but God himself. Shenemar v'avarti b'eretz Mitzrayim v'layla zev, v'keiti kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim, adam v'avima, uv'chal Elohei Mitzrayim eseh shvatim ani Hashem. God took us out himself, v'chvodo v'atzmo, was God. And as it says, God came out, went through Egypt on that night. He killed every b'chor of Mitzrayim from man to animal, and all the gods of Egypt, Hashem made judgment, and Hashem, I am God. What's going on here? Why, first of all, did we ever think it wasn't God? And why couldn't God use a messenger? Why does God have to come b'chvodo v'atzmo? So I'll offer my own answer first, not necessarily the best answer, but I'm afraid that if I just came to my head now, and I'm afraid that if I wait till after I share the Maharal and the Nesivah Shalom, I'll forget. But maybe it ties to this previous Medrash, the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Right? Imagine that some injustice is done against your kid. Not to that extent, but even your kid is 8 years old, they go into the store, they give a $100 bill, and instead they get back change of a $5 bill. Your kid comes back, you know, says something to the store owner yells back at them, what are you talking about, kid? You're lying. They come home in tears. So what's going to happen now? Who's going back to the store on your behalf or on your kid's behalf? You're going to do it. Why? Because you have to defend your child. Something has been, some injustice has been done. You need to make right on what was done to your child. Perhaps what the Medrash just said in the Pirkei de Eliezer is that God heard the cry of Rachel Bat Beno Shel Metushelach on Leil HaSeder. So she comes back years later, he comes back years later, and God says, I didn't forget. And it's Ke'ilu, that brick with that child in it that Michal brought, is sitting in front of him, and he remembers, and God says, it can't be anybody else but me. I have to be the one to go. I have to be the one to take care of this injustice against the Jewish people. That's one possibility. Okay, another possibility. We're not going to take a look at it inside, but I'll tell you the Maharal outside. The Maharal says that he quotes the Gemara in Tanis that says that there are three keys that were not given to anybody else. God holds it himself. I believe Eliyahu stole all three of these keys at one point or another. What are those keys? It's the keys of pregnancy, the keys of rain, and the keys of Tchiyas HaMesim. Says the Maharal that on the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were like a child that was being born. And that's something that cannot be done through a shaliach. God himself had to do that. Also, Tchiyas HaMesim, we're like practically dead and God saves us. The Maharal says it couldn't have been done any other way. Hashem himself had to save us. Okay? That is the Maharal. Feel free to take a look at it inside on your own. The Nesiv HaShalom. What does the Nesiv HaShalom say? So the Nesiv HaShalom quotes the Medrash. The Medrash tells us that on the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, when God took the Jewish people out, God turned to the angels turned to God and say, you know, I understand God. These halalu ovdei avodah zara, halalu ovdei avodah zara. They're all idol worshippers. The Jews are idol worshippers, and the Egyptians are idol worshippers. So why are you letting the Jews go and you're not letting and you're punishing the Egyptians? So God says that if you look at them, yeah, on the outside, the Egyptians and the Jewish people look exactly the same. There's no difference. But if you look at the inside, if you look at the heart of the Egyptians, if you look at the heart of the Jewish people, that's something that you can tell is really, really different. So what's the difference? You can tell that they serve God in their heart, even though on the outside they're not quite there yet, whereas the Egyptians don't. But God says that's something that an angel can't see. That's something that only Hashem v'chvodo v'atzmo could see. Problem is that on the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the only way that the Jews would be deserving of being saved would be if God sees the innermost feelings of the Jewish people. So God saves the Jewish people because he can see that. And so on that night, that's what happens. So I think that this part of the Haggadah is an interesting contrast to the previous parts that we discussed. In the suffering of the Jewish people, it's anonymous people. Even Rachel, bat beno shel Metushelach, good luck trying to find out who she is. The only Metushelach that we know in the Torah is Noach's grandfather, great-grandfather. We have no idea. I was like wondering if that's like even the connection. Metushelach dies and the flood starts, but there is salvation for Noach. Rachel has this grandfather Metushelach. She cries out, and the suffering, you know, starts to come to a close. Everybody there is anonymous. Yet here it's clear. The focus is that it's ani velo, right? It's Hashem. Lo yede melach, lo yede seraf, lo yede shaliach. And even in Pasuk Chav Dalet and Chav Hey, the focus is on Elokim, Elokim, Elokim. Why is it that as far as God goes, God is ever present, and yet when it comes to the people are anonymous? So perhaps the message is that we need to remember that the salvation came really only because of Hashem. So that's one part of it. But now we still don't understand, that maybe will help us understand why the focus on God. But why all the individuals that we don't really know much about? So for that, I want to take a look at what I believe was the Haftorah for last Shabbos, Parshas Tazria, not that we read it, but had we read it, this is a story we would have read. Naman Sarsa Melech Aram Haya Ish Gadol. We have the king of Aram, he's a great, we have the general of Aram, Naman, he is a great man. Lefnei Adonav. He was a great man because he was the one that killed the king of the Jewish people, and through that he became known as a Gibor Chayil, but he was also a Metzora. And at the same time, Aram went and they had some little guerrilla warfare type battles on the border. And they captured a young girl, and this young girl became the servant of Naaman's wife. So she says to her boss, it's such a shame about your husband. He should go to the Navi in Shomron, and his tzaras will be eliminated. She tells this to her husband. Vayomer Melech Aram Leich Bo Veshlachas Sefer El Melech Yisrael. Let's send a message to the King of Israel. Vayelech Vikach Vyado Eser Kikri Kesef V'Eser Alafim Zahav V'Esher Alafim Zahav. Sends a lot of money. V'Eser Chalifot Begadim and 10 changes of clothing. Vayavea Sefer El Melech Yisrael Lehmor V'Atake Bo Sefer Ezei Lecha Hinei Shalachti Lecha Naman Abdi V'Savto Mitzarto. Says, listen, I'm sending Naman, my general, my servant. I want you to take care of him and get rid of his tzarat. So the king says, "Oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm not God. I can't do that." It's interesting. Even he, who is not by any ways a dedicated religious Jew, he understands that God is the one that's supposed to do this. So he says, "What? This is just a pretense to attack me." So Elisha says, "Stupid! What's your problem? Send him to me. I'll take care of it." So he goes to Elisha's house. So he says, go dip. Elisha sends a message. He doesn't come out himself. And Elisha sends the message of saying, go dip 7 times in the Jordan River and you'll be fine. Like Tzof Naaman, Naaman gets really upset. He said, I thought you were going to pray to God. And interesting, he's the first one that uses Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. And you would like run your hand over the place and I'd be better. The rivers of Damascus are much more powerful than the Jordan. If I needed to take a bath, I could have bathed there. And he goes nuts. His servants calm him down. They talk him off the bridge and they say, what's the big deal? He didn't ask all that much. He does finally listen. He goes and he dips in the river 7 times, and he's healed. What's the message of this Haftorah? It's more than just a cute story. The Rabbi Sack says that who are the major players in this story? So other than Elisha, the major players are the King of Israel and Naaman. And by major, I mean in terms of like their power, in terms of who they are. But they don't understand. They think that they understand what's going on. But in the end, it becomes clearer to both the king and to Naaman that success isn't dependent upon themselves, but they have to reach out to others. But they also find out that success is also not dependent on miracles. Right? When Naaman says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, I assume that you just go like that and do some hocus pocus and I'd be better. So he says it's not true. Obedience to Hashem or the messenger of God is what's going to bring a person success. I think Yetzias Mitzrayim is the same. It's not even though there are miracles, God's message to the Jewish people is, how are you saved? You're saved because you're obedient and you're the servants of God. But I think there's one other piece of Yetzias Mitzrayim that's important, and I think that's how it connects. Who are the key figures to this story? Naaman is saved because of the little girl and his servants. They're unnamed, unknown. It's little good people that sometimes are what lead to Geula. Because of them, right? Because of what was in the hearts of this little girl and the hearts of the servants, it's that which saves the Jewish people. Which cries reach God? How do we end up? Remember the first medrash we quoted. That medrash, the medrash that God tells us about the Gehenim that the Jewish people went through in Egypt, and yet there's not a single name there. Those little people, those unnamed, unknown, many of them never came out of Egypt. Those people that died are the people that were really the heroes of Egypt. Somehow they held on enough. They held on to enough hope, enough belief in God. And that's what leads, even the fact that their suffering leads to crying out to God. The fact that there's crying out to God means that the people still believe and are connected to God. It's that I think we have to remember at the Seder night, is that it's a lot of little people, millions and millions of little people over the course of Jewish history that have sustained us and brought us to this very day. And I think that message is particularly important at the Seder, because sometimes we sit at the Seder and we wonder, like, how does it connect to me? Or more than that, like, what am I really in the chain of the Jewish people? I'm simply one more piece. But there are so many people that are so much greater, and there are so many people that really make a difference. What is my genuine contribution to the Jewish people? And I think that the Seder tells us that every single Jewish person that believes, that's connected to God, even if they are the smallest bit player, they are so, 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 so much of a part of the Jewish people, and they make such a difference. And perhaps with this I'll end. That's why so many of the Hasidic stories that we read over time, who is the hero of the story? It's not the Rebbe, but it's like the little person on the farm that could barely read or whatever. Why? Because it's consistent with the message of this of Leil HaSeder. Leil HaSeder is to say that every single person, not just the Rebbe, is so valuable to Judaism. And I think that we shouldn't take that for granted, because I think that that's a very uniquely Jewish concept. Rabbi Sachs points out that the amazing part of our Haftorah is that typically, if you were to read like the stories that were the Greek stories or the Roman stories or, you know, any of the tragedies along the way, it's never the bit players. You always have these big, greater, larger than life heroes. And yet in our Tanakh, who are the heroes? Very often they're not larger than life, but they're regular people. Let's remember and hopefully instill within our family members and everybody that we come in contact with at the Seder, the fact that every single person has a place, every single person has a role, and every single person is so critical to the continuation of the Jewish people. Chag Kosher V'Sameach.